This edition of Commodity Week was recorded Friday, November the 21st, 2008.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
Corn broke sharply to the downside Friday. We'll try to find out where the next stop might be today on Commodity Week. Welcome to Commodity Week. Our panelists in studio today are Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana, Brian Maple of FC Stone in Indianapolis, Indiana, and Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois. Let's open today's discussion with this question. Brian Maple, where's the next stop for the corn market? I'd like a downside assessment.
On the corn market, I've got on my charts a point somewhere around 325 that I think they'll make a stab at trying to run to. We should see some support down there at that point, at least for a brief moment. And I'm not sure we get a whole lot below that. If you look at the weekly chart, there's a fair bit of support at $3. So I would think that would start to hold things together.
Chuck?
I think we feel these corn will hold above the $3 level. Our target would be in the 320 range also, worst case with a spike down, maybe 310, 315.
And Dan Zwicker.
Well, there's some chart support there. There's old previous highs up in that 310, 315, 320. There's a lot of those kind of highs there. So your chart people are going to be at least looking at those initially here for some support.
All right. I'll come back to you because you didn't give me a downside assessment, but I want it from you. But let me give the corn numbers first for the week. December this week, a high of 389.5, a low at 336.5, a settlement price at 338.5, down 41 and three quarters. December 09 at $4.75, off 42 and a quarter. There's support there at 310, but what else are you seeing?
Well, I think we're in a market that you could just about probably put any kind of number on it that you want, and you could get probably lucky hitting. But there was, you can read the charts back to pre-07 price levels. So there's a lot of objectives down there in that 280 level. I can see in a chart whether or not we go down that low or not, I don't know. But you can see a lot of those 250, 280 type price objectives possibility when you read a chart.
So fundamentally, Dan, what do you see that does not support the corn market at this time?
Well, you don't have to go too far. I mean, corn, I guess this could almost be bullish corn because there's 100 reasons why corn ought to go to zero. Whereas to go up, there aren't any. I mean, first off, let's say export sales. We're like 45-50% behind last year's pace. To tell you how bad export demand is, Cuba is our largest booker. So, and now this week, we, of course, it's been in the rumors for the last 2-3 weeks where you had a lot of ethanol plants basically shut down. I mean, when on average, ethanol plants are losing upwards of a dime a bushel that they're crushing or grinding. So you knew it was just a matter of time that you were going to begin to start seeing ethanol plants basically just say they're going to shut the door. So when you look at USDA's projections on exports and you look at their ethanol projections and you look at current demand for corn, the market is pricing in a much larger carryover than basically what USDA has on the books.
So, Brian, Dan says the biggest fundamental reason the corn market ought to go higher is that it should go to zero because all the fundamentals say it's got to go down. So he's the contrarian sometimes, gives us the fundamental reasons why it should go down, but maybe that's a case it should go higher. What do you see in the marketplace?
The fundamentals on the 08-09 crop are definitely negative. There's no question that they lean towards, like he said, we're way too high. We're using 4 billion on ethanol production this year. That's not going to happen, would be my guess. It'll be closer to 3.6 to 3.8 with more plants failing. If you want to find a fundamental positive, it might be that we look forward out into the 9-10 crop year and find that we don't plant the acres that we need to meet the demand for the 9-10. That's about as far as I can go. Corn's going to have a hard time standing up on its own. It's going to need leadership from the beans or the wheat to pull along.
Hey, Chuck, besides the fact that you're a good marketer and you all probably already got all your corn sold for next year, what's a good reason to put corn in the ground?
Because we're going to grow something. And, again, I think there's a certain amount of anticipation by farmers. Again, at this point, I mean, they're feeling they still believe the opportunity will come back around. It's kind of a cat and mouse game with the input side. Is that going to drop down to match to entice us to get it planted? So it's something we're going to do. I mean, corn's going to be planted. It's just a question of how much we're going to have next year, Todd.
So how do you approach this as a producer? What do you look at in the marketplace for both old and new crop corn, the corn that you just harvested and you have in the bin? And then how do you approach next year?
I think what we're experiencing here is the emotional opposite of what we went through this summer. Right now, everything is negative. Everything in the outside markets is negative. I think you could approach it from the standpoint, again, of using your option strategies. If you don't have any support underneath you, so there's some carry in the market, use some put options. If you're going to sell the crop, then, again, you can buy it, replace it with some cheap call options and approach the market that way and see what happens as we get into the new winter market.
How do you approach the marketplace?
I continue to think that at some point we're going to find some support from the outside markets. I think that the energy markets are starting to approach what's going to be solid support for them, and we might see them turn around here in the next near term. That might actually give us a little bit of a pop. The stock market's a whole nother question. It doesn't look like it's done yet. It was a nice return today, but that's questionable. I still tend to think long term the dollar could be in trouble because we've got huge issues to me that we got to deal with on the financial side. And keep in mind, this market's not fundamental today. It's trading mostly on outside markets more so than fundamentals.
I think the first thing you have to realize that the market has shifted from a demand-driven market of the past 2 to 3 years to a supply-driven market. The market is not looking ahead at an expanding demand base like it has over the past 2-3 years. It is actually looking at a shrinking demand base. So the rallies that we've had over the past 2 or 3 years, as people called them, the battle for acreage, does not look like that is in play this year. Now, hopefully I'm wrong on that and we can maybe get a rally to go sometime here during the winter months, but it doesn't look that. So what I think is going to happen if the market does not rally, which that's what it looks like it's not going to do, that at some point in time, maybe next fall, a year from now, or late summer, then the market will have reduced planted acres, so supply is back down at a much smaller level, and then maybe demand ends up being a little better than what the market is looking at, and then we have to go through a supply rationing rally, and that is something we have not gone through for a long time. And see, the last 2 or 3 years, we've been in a supply increasing rally. Is to rally to increase supply. I think the next rally is going to come at us will be a rally to ration demand.
Hold it. I think I followed you all the way through that, but what does that mean in the marketplace?
That means in the marketplace that probably pricing opportunities are going to be somewhat scarce. Now, markets get oversold. Things come along. It could be a weather problem. It could be a financial situation. That does not mean that we can't have rallies over the next 3 to 4 months, but it looks, at least on the surface, that they're going to be rare.
I'm still not sure that I followed it all.
Well, basically what I'm trying to say is that if you're looking for the market to rally, to buy acres
right
this winter, I think you're going to be real long on those odds.
Okay. It was the supply rally that was terminology.
Well, what I'm saying is we're switching over. The market is now looking at a shrinking demand base, whereas the last 2-3 years we were looking at expanding. So the market said we needed to rally to ensure acres. This year the market is looking at a shrinking demand base. Therefore, it does not have to rally to buy acres. It actually is in a mode to discourage plantings.
Right.
And we have had a change in the thought process of the market. Like Dan says, it's totally come around. Plus, throw in the addition that we've lost some of our players. Some of the funds have had these hedge funds, some of the index funds have had an inverse thrill out of our marketplace. And they're not going to be back, would be my guess. So you don't have those players out there that are driving you like they did last year. We drove well beyond what we should have gone because of their involvement in the marketplace.
Well, did the index funds, do you think they really drove it? I mean, there is arguments that say they did not drive it, that they just buy at a price, and that happened to be driven by the speculators. You can call the index fund speculators, but they're coming in at a price, not at a speculative price particularly.
They all built on one another, though, Todd, along the way. They just continued to build on each other as we moved.
But I think you got to change the attitude. I mean, everything now is just wait. It's going to be cheaper tomorrow. Look at gasoline. Look at clothes. Look at shoes. Look at anything. Consumers around the world, whether it be consuming corn or whatever, even fertilizer, whatever attitude would be, just wait, it's going to be cheaper tomorrow. So until that attitude at least bottoms, that things are bottoming, you can't, I think, get a shift in attitude to get things to the plus side without a change in mental attitude.
So that tells me if I'm a producer, buy inputs later but try to market the crop sooner?
We haven't seen a point that we can say it's a bottom yet in any of these, so therefore, if you can find a point where you can make money in your operation, it says some sales would be warranted.
See, a big problem in this market now is nobody trusts anybody to do business with. Everything has come cash on the barrel hit because you don't know whether or not if you ship someone corn, whether or not you're going to get paid. Farmers have stopped basically selling to ethanol plants because they're fearful that they're not going to get a check. So then the ethanol plants have had to turn around and go to your more regional, larger type grain companies, and then they turn around and ask for prepay. They want the money cash on the barrel head before they send it to the ethanol. So we're basically at a short-term cash deal. End users are technically broke. They don't have any money to book forward needs. If they wanted to book forward needs, and you look at the drop in open interest, all the speculative money has vanished over the past summer. So there is not the speculative money to drive the market up, and the end users don't have any money to drive it up. So that is why I think we have shifted now to the next major rally that we have in commodities is going to be supply, is to ration demand because we didn't produce enough of it.
Because we'll be short the crop. So you think the crop's not going to go in the ground next spring or the following one?
Yeah, my guess is corn acres are going to fall off the cliff and we're going to have so many beans around we won't know what to do with them. Wheat acres are down sharply because of fertilizer,
right.
And that already tees up the deal. And you talk to any fertilizer company, and their sales or their movement of fertilizer this fall is way low. So that tells me the corn acres are not going to be planted unless something changes real quick. So ultimately, somewhere here down the road, the market will have to wrestle with demand being larger than supply.
And you're still capable of showing a profit planting beans because really all you have to do is order some bean seed, and you can skip the rest and buy your Roundup or whatever later. So at these price relationships and the price of fertilizer, as Brian's talked about, it just still says you can still make money at beans, and guys are just naturally, I think, going to head that direction.
Well, it takes less cash flow.
Yeah.
And right now, everybody's short of cash, and that's what's going to happen, I think.
Credit's definitely tight. To back up what Dan said, a study I read this week says that less than half of what normally goes on in the fall has gone on. So if nothing else, they may be upset about the high prices that they're being charged today, but they're also leaving their door open. So they can change their mind at any point in time next year, and if prices don't change, and they may change tremendously between now and March or April whenever we decide to plant, but today everything leans towards higher bean acreage and a fairly significant reduction in corn, even though Informa still seems to go against that. I think he was up 900,000 acres.
But based upon what we see happening today, corn acres are not going to be, as farmers are not going to pay the price for fertilizer. And I don't blame them, because I think a lot of fertilizer companies are along this market and they're hung with expensive inventory. And I think farmers just need to wait them out.
Well, it should make for an interesting winter. In previous winters, we were buying acreage. This year, we can't give an acre away, apparently.
And I think it goes back to that psychology, that until you shift the psychology, it's going to be difficult to entice farmers to plant those acres of corn and to get the market mentality to turn around where we want to get people to get back to plant corn.
Here are some of the rest of the numbers as we end up the first half of our week's Commodity Week. Futures finished like this in the wheat pit. December contract to 567 high. A low at 496. A settlement price at 499, down 55 and a quarter. July 545 and three quarters on the settlement price. Soybeans finished the January 921 and a quarter on the high. The low at 835. A settlement price at 840, down 56 for the week. And the November's at 854 and a quarter. We're down 65 and three quarters. December live cattle at 84.90, down $5.15. The feeders at 89.40, down 587 and a half. And December lean hog futures settled at 56.87 and a half, a buck 30 lower. Back in 2 minutes.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. It was a cold, blustery, and dry week across the state of Illinois. A series of cold fronts swept through the state this week, bringing reinforcing shots of cold air southward on strong northerly winds. Temperatures this week were 12 to 14 degrees below normal. Even the warm days between frontal passages were not really warm, just close to normal. And the wind helped to make it feel colder than it really was. Other than some light snow in northeastern Illinois and a few flurries in northern and central Illinois, it was a dry week. Precipitation across the state for November so far is well below normal. The persistent northwesterly flow aloft across the Midwest has deflected storms away from Illinois while funneling in cold, dry air. After the cold weather this weekend, we should see a couple of days of warming next week as high pressure moves to the mid-Atlantic coast and southwesterly winds reestablish themselves across Illinois. It appears the warmer weather will last through Thanksgiving Day. A storm system could be moving into the area beginning late on Thursday and continuing over the Thanksgiving weekend, bringing first some rain and then a return to colder weather. For the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded Friday, November the 21st, 2008. I'm Todd Gleason. Our panelists today in studio are Brian Maple of F.C. Stone in Indianapolis, Indiana, Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois, and Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana. Okay, folks, this week the Des Moines Register reported a growing number of bankrupt ethanol plants, 16 in all, 5 in Iowa, with the exception that number, with the expectation rather, that number will grow to 40 by early next year. And at least one plant, Verisun's Dyersville, Iowa facility, has stopped taking corn. Let's set the politics aside for the moment and leave the fuel supply mandates in place. Will these bankrupt plants be purchased or shuttered?
Some of them will be purchased, not all of them, but there'll be people that come in and buy some of these to try to match up with the production we need.
I'll agree with that. I think some of them will come in. We've got a mandate. Unless they change the mandates, the efficient plants are going to stay out here and operate, and we'll come back to where they're somewhat profitable again.
Who buys them?
who buys them. Some of the oil companies will buy them. I think some of the big grain companies. You've got Verisun plants over in Indiana and then again in Ohio that are right next to Cargill plants. I wouldn't be surprised to see Cargill pick up and operate some of those, Todd.
So the plants will continue to operate. And
some yes.
Some yes, some no.
We're still, today we still have a mandate, and right now we've got, you said put politics aside, but you have a president-elect that is favorable to biofuels. So if he comes in and we don't change mandates significantly, it'll become profitable for some of these plants again.
Does it disrupt the corn market at all, or very much?
It's played havoc with demand expectations, at least for the current marketing year. You know, the thing that we've, you know, what was killing the ethanol plants is you just look at the crude oil market. I mean, you know, from $147 in June and now we're down at $49. And so the slowdown in fuel consumption is a direct correlation with the demand for ethanol, because the less, you know, gasoline you sell, the less ethanol you're going to sell. So, you know, like I said, grinders depend upon their cost of production, when their plant was built and all that kind of stuff, are roughly losing a dime and or more depending upon which plant. Now, my guess is that some of the better plants that strategically located are going to stay operational. Some of the plants that are not necessarily in a good location, whether it's transportation-wise or size or whatnot, those will be the last plants to probably come back up again.
Let's go on a related note, and this is related to the shrinking oil usage in the U.S. U.S. EPA Monday, only because it's basically related to it, US EPA Monday announced its plan to set the 2008 renewable fuel standard at 10.21%. Now, that's about 11.1 billion gallons of fuel. So let's simplify this a bit. Once in a while, we hear about that blend wall. It's mostly represented by the 10% ethanol sticker you see on the gas pump. I said it's simplified, right? If EPA sets the RFS at 10.21%, then there's an extra 300 million gallons of alternative fuels that must be used nationally should the Department of Energy, Chuck, allow those gas pump stickers to say 15 or 20% ethanol instead of 10.
Well, I think what's been lost in all this and history repeating itself, we had an idea to get away from foreign oil. It was a great idea, and it was a better idea, the higher price gasoline. Now we've seen a dramatic drop in the price of gasoline and the attitude. Will we still have the withdrawal as a country to say we want to keep blending that, we want to do things to stay away from that foreign oil? So I think, again, the presidential elect policy is that he says he will stand behind that.
One thing that you got to keep in mind, unless I don't understand something, but just because we have a mandate, I don't think there's anybody that's going to go to prison if we don't meet those mandates. So it still has to be an economically feasible for the market to produce for that mandate.
So that's still economically meaning if we close enough plants, we don't have actually supply, or if it just isn't economically feasible, they won't do it.
Well, you're going to have to see that. See, you see the shift. What's happening is this high price gasoline. Some would say it was still reasonable, but you saw people move away from the lower mileage vehicles and move into higher mileage vehicles. So we are moving toward more efficiency. People are finding different ways to move, or they're traveling less. And all this kind of stuff. So that is, you know, what's being reflected here in ethanol prices too.
Have you considered, Brian, the advice for producers caught in the Verisun issue? We don't want to pay you for your corn issue, you know. So, I mean to say, what if anything should they do to protect those bushels? And let's just say they're no longer priced. Period.
Well, first you got to get an answer from the courts on how they're going to view it. I think to start off with, because they haven't actually answered that question. In Indiana, actually, like Chuck, is safe because his sales are actually with Cargill and they're not with Verisun. But if you get out in Iowa, those people have some issues to deal with because they've got corn sold that they don't know whether it's sold or not at this point. So they're caught and they're watching a market that's failing at this point. They probably need to own some puts against some of that stuff just in case it doesn't end up being tradable.
Chuck, have you considered what to do? If I know if you were trade in Indiana, they'd be protected. But if not, what do you do?
I would agree with Brian what I said earlier, too. I think you have to, at this point, be defensive for a while and still maintain some put options if you're wide open. It can get worse before we can find the bottom and stabilize and then recover.
Shall we talk about soybeans, Dan? What do you see in that marketplace?
Well, soybeans have been, at least demand-wise, we're holding at last year's level, and that's quite of an accomplishment because you're comparing it to a very, very strong start to last year. And soybeans is a little different type commodity than corn is. Corn, you got to keep in realize, is a feed grain, and then we had a big chunk of that corn value priced as an energy in there, and both those have declined significantly, whereas soybeans, yes, there is an element of energy value, but it is still mostly a protein oilseed. So, again, depending upon the world economy and how things pan out, the chart does keep the door open. I mean, you can probably read a bear flag in the weekly soybean charts for return back to the $6 level. That doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to go down there, but I'm sure some of your bearish chart people are going to start touting a return to the $6. I do think there's a lot of support points before we have to go to $6 to get there.
I think one thing that's been lost in all this is the fundamental side of the beans. You know, a little more drop in production on the acreage or the yield, and demand, as Dan said, has been very good. You can tighten things up pretty good, so that has a little different look to it than corn.
Well, on that fundamental front, and maybe more than one of you might want to tackle this, but what difference does it make that protein is off so sharply in the bean crop in the United States? I mean, does that simply mean we have to crush a lot more beans? And does the price of a bushel of bean really have to be much lower in order to make up that cost?
Well, the problem we got in soybeans is meal demand is really weak. And, I mean, you just look at your livestock numbers, you look at your big poultry enterprises and whatnot, you've really seen a slowdown of soybean meal demand. And then, of course, vegetable oil prices have been following. They followed crude oil up, and they're following crude oil down. So that's a big concern with soybeans is that the underlying feed demand base of smaller livestock herds and poultry herds, it makes meal real weak. It's hard to peddle.
Yeah, wait. So does that give the crusher two problems? One, he's got to have more bushels in order to get meal, and he really doesn't have demand for that meal too. Isn't that sort of on the input side and the output side both? He's getting
you have a problem. The crusher's got problems selling GDDs from the ethanol to meal because you're all competing. You got large supplies, and you're competing into a shrinking market right now.
Hmm. Time for a final word from everybody. Brian?
But if we lose some of the DDG production through the ethanol, we'll see some of that demand come back. And in answer to your other question, the lower protein I don't think is affecting us tremendously. They're worried about it having access to beans because they're running out of beans right now. Cedar Rapids plant's cutting production back because of it.
Final word from our panelists in studio. We'll start with you, Dan Zwicker.
Well, I do like to be a contrarian, and I do think the last couple of weeks have probably really tilted the scales to the downside bearishness. The ounce of hope that I have or a little bit of optimism is that there is a very, very strong seasonal that these markets have a tendency to strengthen here between the end of February to the end of February.
Dan Zwicker's with ADM Grain Group. Chuck Shelby is with Risk Management Commodities.
We saw breaks on the way up in this bull market. I think the same thing is true. We're still probably in a down trend, but we'll have opportunities. We've got to look for those opportunities to take advantage of as producers.
And Brian Maple of FC Stone.
I think you look at what we just started to talk about is the demand base on beans. If we start to see issues down in South America, the bean market could be what actually leads us out, but then it hampers us next summer if we increase bean production.
That's this week's edition of Commodity Week. Thanks for listening, and thanks to our panelists in studio. I'm Todd Gleason.